two sessions in the morning, we basically discuss a lot of issues, and the question comes down to who will do all these things, who plays the most, you know, critical role in resolving all these issues, in changing things, and we're basically talking about the Uzbek people. And right now you have hundreds of Uzbeks living in this country, in different parts of it. This is definitely a remarkable event. As was mentioned earlier, this is the first time I have seen so many Uzbeks in one place discussing their issues together. You know, I've covered the community for many years, and we've never seen such discussions at an academic institution, actually. So we have to thank Marlin and Central Asia Program for organizing this. The story of Uzbek immigrants is not very different than the story of other immigrants around the world. They come here and continue to come here for various reasons, mainly for in search of a better life. Some are here because of their family connections and relations. Some are here as political refugees and asylees. A lot of them are green card lottery winners. And some are here illegally. And while some are here to study and train. So the community is very diverse. It is really hard to know when was the first time an Uzbek stepped onto American soil. But we know that there have been three major waves of immigration to the United States from Uzbekistan, from the former Soviet Union. So we're talking about what I call old Uzbeks, who came here mainly in 1950s, 60s, 70s. These were the children of Uzbeks who fled the Bolshevik Revolution, the Stalin's repression, and they came via Afghanistan, Turkey, Europe, and the Arab countries. And then the second wave started in late 80s and went through early part of 90s. And among them were Bukharian Jews, who I'm sure many of you have heard about. It's a very integrated, solid group of immigrants who are mainly based in Queens. And then the third wave started when Uzbekistan became independent. So these are the representatives of independent Uzbekistan. And you will hear a little bit about the different waves, too, from our speakers. But we don't really know how many Uzbeks are here in the United States. There is no official number. But we can make some estimates. The community leaders tell us that we are at least 300,000. And the main concentration, the largest community, is in New York, New Jersey area. But then you have thousands of Uzbeks in Chicago, around Chicago. Onam Sharipov and Akmal Jumabayev are the representatives of that community. Dilshod Zokirov here will represent the New York, New Jersey Uzbek concentration. And then Behzod Muhammadiyev is the chief editor of Vatandosh newspaper, which is the first Uzbek language newspaper outside of Uzbekistan. It's basically what I call classic immigrant newspaper. And then Delorom has one of the very successful NGOs that were founded outside of Uzbekistan. Tashabbus was the idea of young lawyers, mainly educated in the United States. It has a very interesting mission, and they're very active online, so we'll hear more from Delorom about this. There have been some interesting developments lately involving the Uzbek community in the United States, mainly Brooklyn, where three residents, Uzbeks, ethnic Uzbeks, were arrested in February, accused of trying to join ISIS, and they all lived in the area where Vatandosh is based. So Vatandosh has been doing a lot of work lately with the Brooklyn political leadership and with the community in that area to sort of explain the situation, to make people aware of this issue of radicalism and extremism. And it's a huge story, so I'm hoping that we'll get to discuss that a little bit too. I want to also mention that I'm not wearing my broadcaster's hat here, so I'm not talking on behalf of the Voice of America. I'm just an Uzbek American in this round table. And Bill Zawad is also my colleague. He works with us at the Voice of America, and I know that he will also be sharing his insights as a freelancer, mainly as the chief editor of Vatandosh. So please think of some really interesting, stimulating questions while you listen. I want to start with Dilara. The floor is yours. Tell us about the shovels.
Good afternoon again, everyone. I am very pleased to be here and meet old and new friends here. So today I'm going to talk about Tashabbus, which is a non-profit organization established in Washington, D.C. So I'm going to talk about give information overall what Tashabbus does and how it started and what are our mission and aim. So talking about the background, it was founded in 2004 it was started as a web blog first. I graduated from law school in Uzbekistan in 2010, and I had an experience in working at legal clinic back in Uzbekistan. I worked for 3 years, and it was a most exciting and good experience for me. So I thought after I graduated from law school, I moved to the United States and thought it would be better for me to continue my work at the legal clinic, but this time online, because of the circumstances, because of the family issues, I was here. So it was started as a web blog, but eventually we registered as an organization in 2012, and it's a non-profit, it has a non-profit status. We work mostly in online environment because of the geographical distance, and we find it quite feasible for us because it has positive sides and also some negative sides, but for our situation we find it best to work online. And uniqueness of our project is that we post all the work we do in Uzbek language. One of the main reasons of establishing our organization project was to target Uzbek-speaking people who are in rural areas. And we think as an organization, if a person can speak Russian or another language, English or others, they have a better chance of having access to information they need or can demand or defend their rights. And that's why our target is mostly Uzbek-speaking people in Uzbekistan. So I talked about the legal experience, experience at the legal clinic, and I'm not the only one who started this organization. We have co-founders and colleagues, and most of us had an experience at the legal clinic, and that's where we got our inspiration to continue our work online. So all of us work on a volunteer base, and many of us abroad, located in some other countries, and we do have also freelancers who contribute with some legal article or legal materials inside Uzbekistan, law students or recent graduates. So our mission is to encourage and empower citizens to actively participate in the process of strengthening the rule of law in Uzbekistan. As an organization, we and personally, I think that legal system of Uzbekistan has necessary preconditions and safeguards for building a democratic state with strong rule of law. But we see there is two problems for that. And one is flagrant disregard of constitutional rights and laws by the government officials with impunity. And the second one is citizens' failure to take effective legal actions against such violations. And that has been indirectly contributing to the growing disrespect of citizens' fundamental rights. So we see the problem there, and we wanted to contribute our share because we have this knowledge, expert experience, so we can help people in our capacity. So we, in order to help, we decided to offer pro bono legal advice to those in need. And when I say legal advice, I don't mean legal services. It has different it has different meanings in the legal definition, legal terms in the U.S. We are all lawyers, law graduates from Uzbekistan, and by the laws of Uzbekistan, we are licensed. To practice law, to give it a legal advice, and pro bono means for free of charge. And we provide information about the legal system and laws of Uzbekistan, especially in the context of fundamental rights and duties. And we publish articles and papers that educate citizens of Uzbekistan about their rights and effective means of defending them. So it's not only giving information which exists on the laws, but we do provide advice on how to defend them, how, what strategy to take, or how to approach that defending procedure. And we publish commentaries on the laws of Uzbekistan with the purpose of identifying legal loopholes and encouraging discussion among scholars, practitioners, and law students. Every time when there is a law, new law adopts, we take it and look into it and explain to the lay people in the lay terms what implications for them it has and what they can benefit or what how they can see their future with that law. And we try to encourage discussion with other scholars, law practitioners, and law students, which has been difficult for us in recent years. And we conduct comparative studies on the laws and practice of Western democracies with the aim of finding solutions to the problems in the Uzbek legal system. So we do comparative studies analysis because most of us who work, who contribute to Tashabbus have experience studying abroad. I personally had a chance to study in Japan, which is a developed country with a civil law system, which is close to Uzbek legal system, and also had a chance to study in the U.S., which is a common law system, which is different. And others also have the same experience. And the last thing we do is to assist law students and recent graduates to enhance their legal education and become socially responsible lawyers. So we try to mentor them through engaging them to our project. We do mentoring through the experience with the help, with the creating, producing answers to the legal questions and how to approach the law, how to find, how to legal research, and how to be responsible lawyers. With that, I mean we talk about ethics, lawyer ethics, which is mostly neglected in the legal education in Uzbekistan. Now we are operating for almost 5 years, and we had success stories. We covered very wide range of topics, and we had many cases. And we have a contact form on our website where people can write their legal issue or question that they have to us, and we try to give them information, answer to their questions. And because of that, we receive hundreds of questions per month since 2010 when we started, and we have a big, very big collection of questions from the citizens, from Uzbek people all over the world, I would say. And we had some court cases. We do not do legal representation inside Uzbekistan, but we do have people who want to go to the court and defend, take the legal procedure. And we had one case where employees were forced to pick a cotton in cotton fields, and on the way to the cotton field, they had a car accident where employees were injured. And through our help and advice we provided, those employees were able to get damage money compensation through the court, and that was one of our success cases. And we also had, that was a court case, and another one I can bring as an example is schoolgirls' religious dress case, where parents were taught, the schoolgirls were not allowed to schools with a headscarf in Uzbekistan, and parents had complained, and we they had a question, first of all, whether it was legal or illegal in Uzbekistan according to the laws of Uzbekistan, and if yes or no, how they can fight for their children's right. And we have given them information about Uzbek laws and how what they say about this religious dress, and in the context of schoolgirl, we have given advice and strategy how to defend their rights. And within a month or 1.5 months, we received a warm email saying that thank you, because of the advice or information we have provided, they were actually able to stop harassment, or it was not official, but persecutions of from the directors of the school, and they were able to send their daughters to school with a headscarf. And other cases I can say about child labor case, it was in 2013, we were publishing and working on elimination, legal strategies or legal remedies on fighting with forced labor and child labor, and we have provided information that it was what Uzbek law says about child labor and other stuff. And one case was reported that a parent of a college vocational school student was able to stop his son from being mobilized to the cotton fields because he had the information we have provided. And after his action, the whole class, parents of the whole class were able to stop their children from being sent to the cotton fields because he had the information we have provided. And after his action, the whole class, parents of the whole class were able to stop their children from being sent to the cotton fields. And in 2014, we have produced a manual on legal remedies against forced labor in cotton fields. It was the most substantial and important work we have done so far. It was published in Uzbek and in Russian language. So the topics we cover are, I would divide them into three parts: national issues, international issues, and some work in the U.S. Regarding the U.S. legal system. And when I say national, I would include, we have covered a very wide range of topics and issues, and these are just one example. We have worked on religious freedom very extensively, and we have done work on torture, complaints to the police and the national security services. And we, the biggest number of questions we get is related to family law, and we have done work on forced labor and freedom of assembly, and every single case, every single answer or article we published has a background, which is a legal, real story. They have real stories. We rely on, we base on, and through them, and based on the legal system of laws of Uzbekistan, we try to bring answer and comment on them. And through the international documents which Uzbekistan signed, we also bring give international perspective that how this issue would have been solved if that happened, and so on. International, when I say international, we had questions from people who are Uzbek citizens but living abroad, who were victims of human trafficking, or citizens living abroad but had issues with visa and permanent residency issues. They didn't have access to information because of the lack of information regarding these issues. And citizen rights, when I say that there was famous case, we have public commented law and published articles about Uzbek citizens being sentenced to death in Indonesia for drug smuggling, and how their citizens' rights of having defense from their country were ignored. And about the U.S. legal system, we started since 2012 about writing or providing some information about the U.S. legal system and how it operates and how the constitutional rights are given to everyone on the soil of the U.S., to the Uzbek immigrants in the U.S. So one of the features, we get access to those people, we write in Uzbek language, and we know that there are so many big number of Uzbek immigrants who do not speak English or Russian. So we have written on constitutional rights such as which can work for their benefit, and how what their rights, what their obligations, what they are expected to know, and what they have to do when federal agencies or from the police approach to them, because we thought these are important for the immigrant communities to know. And we are planning to continue our work with the same mission, with the national issues, and with also, we have since the incidents which took place in New York, we are more committed to work with the Uzbek immigrant community in the U.S. as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have Dishad now, who is from Brooklyn, which we call Little Uzbekistan. Is the latest number is what, 25,000 Uzbeks? Official residents of the Brooklyn borough. So, go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much. First of all, this is my, we can say historical day, because I'm as a guest panelist. First time in my life. And thank you for the Uzbekistan Initiative and Nabahari Manva. So, Vatandosh Uzbek American Federation is as a community center in New York, established 2013 as a non-for-profit organization because of this newspaper. Vatandosh Uzbek newspaper is first newspaper in New York. Articles and different topics and information about immigrants, about America. And after that, people, they start calling us and ask about different type of information about America and information for new immigrants. And after that, we had some active people who worked as a activist in Brooklyn, New York, and we decided to open this Vatandosh Uzbek American Federation as a non-profit organization. So to help for new immigrants. It's a very important thing, because usually when immigrants come to new countries, they don't know they don't know language, they don't know the legal system, they don't know new cultural traditional things. So that's why they have different type of problems. And so our community center serves as a venue for cultural, educational, sports, and religious activities. So here, gift for new member. So we have membership for like monthly and yearly. If people wants to join us, they can take different type of information about our organization and of course new life in New York City. So this is Wall Street, New York City. Actually it's like 5 or 6 years now we have like in Uzbekistan Independence Day, we have a flag raising ceremony in Wall Street with Turkestan American Association and General Consulate of Uzbekistan, which is in New York City. So, and this last year, actually, we are organized a big car parade. It's Independence Day car parade in New York City, and this was the biggest, I think, event in our history because we tried to show to American people and other immigrants about Uzbekistan, because when you say I'm from Uzbekistan, say, oh, nice to meet you, you are from Pakistan. So Uzbekistan is not Pakistan. So that's why we try to show our flag, our Independence Day, and about our country. So it was a very good event. Even police departments, they helped us to organize this event. You can see people very proud with our flag and this car, like cars. It was amazing. I mean, and this summer, last summer, we organized a summer camp in Brooklyn, New York. It was first experience. Actually, by the way, he's my son. Which is his American flag and Uzbek traditional head, the dofa. It was very nice because we provided like classes in Uzbek language, because you know to be immigrant is good, but we have some problems for our children because they have to. We are trying to keep our Uzbek culture, Uzbek language, and of course religion. So we try to hit them about Uzbekistan and our national flag and our like history, Uzbek history, and we have planned to continue this summer camp. It calls Bolajan in this year, so we have a plan. And this is Embassy of Uzbekistan because we came to visit Uzbekistan embassy with our ESL students. Actually, Vatandosh opened like English, Russian, and English Uzbek classes in Brooklyn. We have very good connection with the Manhattan Community School. We are using their classes, and we have students there who learned like basic English. And also, this is very exciting news because he's Mr. Eric Adams, who's the first. Now he's a new. We don't live Uzbeks. They live in close to ocean, which is Brighton Beach, Ocean Parkway area. Now it calls Little Uzbekistan too, because if you go, you can see a lot of Uzbek people there. And also, we have a space which is people can use as a library to come and to learn to get some information about the immigrants. And it was very nice because of Uzbekistan Embassy and General Consulate of Uzbekistan in New York City. They actually gave us a bunch of books from Uzbekistan, like literature books, and for first, second, third grades books, which is in Uzbek, because we need that. we cannot find in America, and that's why we are trying to teach them based on that books. It's very helpful. Of course, we have some problems. We have Vatan Dalaj faces several challenges, such as limited space and resources for activities, as well as volunteers from the community. It also needs to work closely with New York City Mayor's Office. The community needs help fighting domestic violence and provide legal services. Actually, I would like to pay more attention for domestic violence in the last 3 years, we can say. Domestic violence is very high in New York City among Uzbeks. Actually, I'm doing now my research paper on domestic violence seminar course. I think that the topic is very interesting, domestic violence among Uzbeks in New York area. We can ask why the domestic violence and divorce is very high? Because of several aspects, because people, they don't know English. Because DV lottery doesn't require English language. So actually I came in 2007 by DV lottery. When I came, I didn't speak in English. I just knew how much card, give me card, potato, kind of basic things. But after that, I took evening classes in community college. So I can give example. New immigrant needs to learn English, because after we opened Vatan Dalaj newspaper and the Vatan Dalaj Uzbek Federation, we had a lot of different calls, like Uzbek people, they asked help. I can give the example. One guy who is around 40 years old, he worked as a home attendant without English, because he knows Russian. He worked with a Russian man in the 25th highest floor, and he lived in 16th floor. And one when he had lunchtime, because he worked very close to Verizana Bridge, which is close to the ocean. He's an interesting guy. He decided to see that ocean from 25th floor, roof. And he went to the highest floor and he saw this sign, warning sign, do not cross beyond this sign, line. But even that, because of he doesn't have English, so that's why he didn't know what's the sign. He opened the door and he went to open. After 3 minutes, the alarm worked, of course. After 3 minutes, police came and they arrested. And after that, he's called, okay, I didn't understand. I would like to try to see ocean and enjoy from roof. Because of language problem, they arrested him. And after that, we called them and we explained the situation. Sorry, and the police, of course, they helped. In this case, because of language, he crossed the line, and because of that, they arrested. We have different problems. Like it was one example, and so that's why. Our focus is mostly to help for immigrants for basic information. We mentioned, actually thank you for Tashabbus, because they are giving a lot of good legal information for new immigrants, and of course the Vatan Dalaj newspaper, and thanks to support new immigrants. So yeah, if we published long time ago, not long time ago, about domestic violence, the topic was, are we ready to start new life in America? So after the topic, I got some comments from Chicago, from California, Uzbeks. Yeah, as you said, everything is okay in California, everything is okay in Chicago. Maybe yes, because less people there. In New York, majority Uzbekistan's immigrants, they live in New York area. So we have a domestic violence problem because they don't know, sometimes they don't know how to explain to police. Even husband or wife, they don't, maybe they don't call to 911, but neighbors, when you fight, of course, neighbors can call and they can come and they can arrest very easily because of that problem. So That's why it's very important to work with Uzbeks. And we had another article about that the last incident who tried to join to ISIS, three Uzbeks, and after that we I wrote one article about why this kind of thing is happening. And the Vatandosh Uzbek American Federation's purpose is not to control people. We cannot control because they have right. We are in freedom. I mean, a free country, which is some people they looks misunderstood that control. We cannot. It's impossible to control new immigrants. We don't want to control them. So our purpose is to show good and right direction. To have a successful life, successful start in this new country. So, because no point to control them, and why we need to control them. So, that's the main goal, to help for new immigrants. So, so we are proud of our work with Uzbek immigrants. If you are interested, to get involved, we are help to help. Please join us. Keep calm and join Vatandosh. Thanks so much.
To Berzot now, who has been managing Vatandosh newspaper. The newspaper has now gone online, right? It doesn't get published
yes.
in paper.
Yes, I will briefly discuss about the development of Uzbek print media, particularly Vatandosh newspaper in the U.S., what was the initial objective for establishing Uzbek newspaper in the U.S.? What were the challenges? And after the 5 years of operation, what is the situation right now? What are the challenges and new opportunities? So I will talk about these questions. So Vatandosh, which translates into English as fellow countrymen or compatriot, is a monthly newspaper published in Uzbek in Brooklyn, New York City. And we aim to serve the people of Uzbekistan and Central Asia who speak Uzbek language and number, according to our estimates, more than 300,000 across the states of America. Most of them live in New York City and neighboring cities and states. I was a second-year graduate student when Farhad Sultan, our publisher and currently the president of Vatandosh Uzbek American Federation, contacted me and told me about his plans to open a newspaper in Uzbek in New York City, and we worked together, we devised the plan and discussed about the general direction of the newspaper, what topics to cover, what not to cover, etc. And so from the very beginning, it was our intention to avoid covering issues that are politically sensitive and such news about Uzbekistan, because our main objective was to engage with as many Uzbek immigrants as possible who live abroad. And we considered this approach, and as it is stated in our about page on our website, our main objective is to help the people of Uzbekistan who immigrate to the U.S. To help them adapt to and integrate into new life in America and help them preserve their language and culture. Since our approach was not to pay much attention to political news, initially there were a lot of rumors, accusations from some opposition groups, some individuals, that this newspaper was a government project. As an editor of this publication and as someone who was with this project since the beginning, I can tell you that it's not a government project. We didn't get any help from the embassy or from any other government agency, whether it's financial or in any other ways. So Farhad Sultan, our publisher, was active in shaping the direction of the newspaper, but as an editor, I was free to choose what to select for publication or what not to select. So there was no external interference. The biggest challenge for us was the financial side of the project. If you know there are dozens, if not hundreds, of Russian language media outlets in the US, each one of them has its own share from the Russian-speaking audience, who come from post-Soviet countries, and almost all of them make some profit. They are profitable, that's why they are running these businesses. That's why our expectation was that we could at least make some profit, which would be enough to cover the operational expenses, and we would continue without interruption. However, the reality was very tough. Yes, we had revenue from advertisements, and most of the time it was enough to cover the expenses, but it was not a lot, and it was not regular. That's why it was financially very tough for us to continue the publication. Because we didn't have a lot of resources, financial resources to invest. Most of them was from our publishers' personal contributions. And we knew that if you don't invest a lot of money, especially in the US, you can't expect very financially successful business. This was, I think, the blame is just for us. So I would blame ourselves for this. Okay, what is the situation right now? Well, I think this question will tell you the main part of our story. Right now, okay, from the January of this month, we stopped printing the print version of our newspaper due to financial hardships. It operated almost 5 years. We almost published every month, initially twice a month, but unfortunately, due to financial problems, we decided to stop the print version, but our website is still online. We are regularly and almost daily updating it. So, I think there is still a great need for such publications in Uzbek, for the community, because especially given the recent incidents about the arrest of three Uzbek men who are allegedly associated with ISIS, it's more important and there's more greater need for such projects, because these publications used to give the community about to know what is going on in their community, to keep them more engaged with each other. Also, in certain ways, it would educate them on how to be a good law-abiding citizens. And I think it's important that we should continue the publication and find ways to raise finances to continue our work. I want to talk a little bit about the role of our newspaper that had in, like, building some connections between Uzbek immigrants in the U.S. and our motherland, Uzbekistan. From the beginning, well, we have a lot of readers from Uzbekistan. You know, from our website, we have been Uzbek immigrants in the U.S. and our motherland, Uzbekistan. From the beginning, well, we have a lot of readers from Uzbekistan. You know, from our website, we have close to 20,000 Facebook likes on our Facebook page, and most of them, I can't tell exactly, but we have a lot of readers from Uzbekistan. And from the beginning, we wanted to engage with Uzbekistan because I would consider our immigrant community relatively young compared to other ethnic groups in the U.S. I'm not talking about this old generation Uzbeks who came during Soviet period, but this after the immigrants who came to the U.S. after the independence, they are very young. They are still connected to Uzbekistan, and we wanted to bring some news that would be interesting for the immigrants about Uzbekistan. And we would cover some changes that would affect our immigrants about, for example, travels to Uzbekistan or bringing certain items, all this stuff, definitely. And also a lot of Uzbeks from Uzbekistan, they were interested in our newspaper, they would write articles, they would always comment about our work. And this is the basically the situation right now we have. Publication. Thank you.
Turkistanian American Association, which is the oldest ethnic Uzbek organization in the United States, which is based in Parsippany, New Jersey, has been, you know, for years they were very active in the United States. And we invited the members to join this panel, but they gladly passed the torch to the younger generation because, as you're hearing, the majority of Uzbek immigrants in America are young people. I don't want to say that Alim Sharipov is, you know, he's obviously our senior member here. And the Uzbek American Association of Chicago has been very successful for the past 5 years in integrating the community around Chicago. So let's hear from them.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for Nabava for introducing me. Thank you, Dr. Lowell and George Washington University. The Uzbek American Association of Chicago was founded in early 2009. Yes, you may ask why. As because of same as Dilshod said before. If someone asks where we are from, the response from Uzbekistan, and the immediate following question is that Pakistan. Someone even created new state at Uzbekistan. So this is why we created our association, to emphasize our roots, our culture. We organized to formally introduce ourselves into the local community and to earn recognition as a community of our own. There says, saying in Uzbek, that says, in every joke, there is a hint of truth. Earlier, I highlight pattern of ignorance that often surrounds my culture. So, in that joke, in the harsh truth, every Americans don't know about Uzbekistan. Especially in Chicago, because of not too much Uzbeks in Chicago. So one of the hopes in creating our association was enlighten our Chicago community about our heritage. Second, we recognize the new immigrants in our community often experience difficulty on top of what they are unfamiliar with Americans' laws and regulations. In this case, the Uzbek American Association takes a huge role as a community support group to help immigrants settle into their new lives and establish themselves. We want to do everything we can to benefit our immediate community and the greater community in the Chicago area. Third, we actively emphasize that United States is a nation of opportunities. America is such a young country, but it stands as a leader of the international world today. There is a lot of opportunities here for our children to demonstrate their talents and learn skills critical for today's world. In patriotism, humanism, freedom of expression, and freedom of religion, American culture serves as a leading role model for us and for the rest of the world. As a community, strive to implement these values into the daily lives of our children and ourselves, to be progressive, to move forward, to give our children the best opportunities possible. We take pride in our own unique heritage, language, and traditions. Our final objective aims to preserve the culture for future generations. I want to highlight a couple of cultural traits to emphasize about ourselves. The first trait is hospitality. The importance of excellent hospitality is deep-rooted into Uzbek culture. Our happiness depends on the happiness we can bring to our guests. When I was a kid, I remember that my mother used to keep two separate candy boxes. One was filled with regular generic candy for the kids. The other was filled with expensive quality candy for our guests. The second thing is the Uzbek cuisine. Uzbek pilaf, samsa, manti, and many other unique dishes are native only to Central Asia. But today, they are very popular in the former Soviet nations. Maybe one day in America, our Uzbek tandoori samsa will be popular as a load of Italian pizzas. And finally, the countless social traditions that Uzbeks have. Many of these traditions can be found on special occasions, like marriages. For example, it's said that if a married couple drinks juice together on their wedding, their new life together will be as sweet as juice. The population of Uzbeks in Chicago is growing quickly. More families and immigrating here, more Uzbek American children are being born here. The first generation of Uzbek Americans is quickly expanding, and for the first time ever, they are creating an identity for itself. As the new generation continues to grow, it's becoming vital to our generation, the older generation, to address our concerns for their future. How they shape their identity, how they contribute to our community, and how they contribute to this nation. How can we shape our children? How can we effectively give them direction that will optimize their success? Furthermore, how can we do this while retaining the Uzbek America? In other words, how should this modern Uzbek be? The following three principles are what I found essential for the new Uzbek generation to possess. First, speak more than one language, especially Uzbek as their ethnic language. Second, understand their religion. Third, know their history, heritage, and familial background. Explaining the true meaning of our religion, clarifying and solidifying our interpretation of the religion, will discourage any ambiguity of what Islam stands for, and in turn will ensure that no individual of the community is left vulnerable to perverted, harmful interpretation of Islam. We want to teach our children tolerance and understanding for all religions. In Uzbek, we have a proverb that says, "Have an open heart and others will have the same for you." We also teach our kids about our ethnic history. We educate them on how our ancestors were leaders of great civilizations, so that they will have a sense of pride of where they come from. They will know about the rich history Central Asia has and the many rulers, scholars, and scientists it has fostered. The name just few centralized countries modernists would be the founders of Algebra Al-Khwarizmi, the great astronomer Al-Biruni, and the greatest scholar of the natural sciences, Avicenna. The association works create multicultural community with positive experiences to everyone. We see that globalization is rapidly expanding. This means that we have to understand each other. We must encourage tolerance, acceptance, and support. We must promote diversity. This is what our association aims to do. We are the Uzbek American Association of Chicago. Thank you for giving me your attention. Now, I would like to introduce to Akmal John to present a little more about our association.
Thank you, everyone. Navahar, Lauren. As we know, our topic is retaining Uzbek culture and values in Chicago. We brought some examples, some clothing there, which is you can see there on the picture. Here's the school, one example, who's the Uzbek children studying there in the very crowded location of the Chicago area. Here's a cool, for one example, here is the Uzbek Culture Day in American schools, elementary school here. The lots of people, the children and parents there, they're sharing their own cultures. It was Uzbeks and Poland, American, and then Lithuanian, different nationality there. And then it was the big traditional cultural day there. So, as a Uzbek, in Chicago, now last 10 days, I have been living here for the last 12 years there, and then I'm seeing the last 10 day years growing very much the Uzbek population, and then they are coming every year and more. One thing here, Uzbek Culture Day, it was the big school. Each room had a own room nationalities. So one is the here Uzbeks Uzbek room. Lots of parents and then children, the friends and then other communities visit there, and then they watch the our culture stuff and then talk each other and then, get some information more there. Here's a very beautiful room they made. From Uzbek community, every family that's brought some piece of the culture stuff, and then they created very beautiful room here. Here's lots of people visiting here. Here is small video here. So that day was very beautiful. And then the families share each other the information, and then making dialogue with each other, then so learn about the cultures, and then learn about the Uzbek traditions, then clothing, and then they ask lots of questions that how they come, how they make, and then how easy, how difficult. So we say them Uzbeks are keep their both heritage and then. Old style and then new, and then all we showed there whatever we could. So here is some video about our organization.
I also wanted to mention that noticeably the Embassy of Uzbekistan has become very active lately in working more closely with the Uzbek community around the country. We've just heard from Uzbeks in New York, in Chicago, but as you travel across the country, you have different communities. You have a concentration around Seattle, which is a sister city of Tashkent. You have a growing community in Los Angeles. You have a rapidly growing community in Texas. You have Uzbek communities in Tennessee. You have a political refugee community in Missouri. You have a community in Ohio now, again, mainly political refugees there too. And Florida, in my view, Florida has a lot of illegal Uzbeks. We don't get to hear much from them, but every Uzbek is a walking story. They all have their own incredible histories, and you just heard from some of them, and hopefully this gives you a glimpse into the Uzbek lives in the United States. Very often people say, well, how is the Uzbek diaspora doing in the United States? I personally, and also as a journalist, hesitate to call the community a diaspora. I don't think the community is there yet. is, as you have heard from Uzbek is here, it's a community still struggling with the basics, you know, how to establish yourself here, how to take roots, how to be an Uzbek and yet embrace everything that is American, how to take roots in this country, how to find a job, how to send your kid to the best possible school in the area. So the community isn't yet thinking about having some kind of a larger impact. Definitely, you know, they're not there to think about political impact. So I will open the floor for questions now, and I'm hoping that, you know, some of you will also ask about these issues, because at the end of the day, fine, you know, there are hundreds of Uzbeks here. Yeah, we can promote our culture and our history, you know, as much, but what is the point? What are we trying to put here, you know, as Uzbeks? Are we trying to convince the American public that we are the, you know, our ancestors are the greatest people in the world, or are we trying to establish ourselves in this society and have some kind of an impact here and at home? So I'm going to leave you with those thoughts, and let's see who... Go ahead, Ronald.
Rael Hanks from Oklahoma State University. I'm Jonaka. I want to thank you for the wise and beautiful things you said about Islam. And I also want to let you know that if you wish to come to Oklahoma and
open a restaurant selling shashlik and samsa, I will personally keep you in business. More seriously, to follow up on Navajo's point just a moment ago, I was sitting here as an American, as someone who grew up in this country and grew up in this culture. First of all of you make me very proud to be an American. You are the American dream. And it struck me that maybe just as a general question to follow up on the point that you raised, I'd like to know what the biggest challenge each of you faced when you came to this culture in this country as an immigrant.
This is a question to all of you. Why don't you start,
So there is gender equality.
Okay, I think one of the challenges when we started our life in the U.S. was adaptation to the new society, new norms. Although I had experience of living in the United States before I moved, I was an exchange student when I was in high school to the U.S., but still being an independent, you know, being responsible for the family, taking care of yourself is different, and it is more difficult if you are in another state. And being I was mature enough to face these problems, but one thing I wish we had at that point was some kind of guidance from some senior people who has experience, who have been through this experience. For example, showing our way for career, advising with careers, or advising with education paths we take, or where to settle down, what we should pay attention to. And I would imagine that can be a mentor or close friend or someone close who's open to help to immigrants. For example, if we had that kind of help, I think now we may have been in a better situation now. We have made some wise decisions before instead of some others we took in the past. And I support this Uzbek American associations or any community in any way, because I imagine them, I want them to create such an opportunity for the newcomer or who came recently, so that they didn't lose their control, or they didn't fall in despair or lose some hopes. It's basically, you know, obviously different culture. There are obvious problems with adjusting to new culture, new society, and new people, and there should be some help to anyone, whether they are educated or who doesn't speak English. Those help is needed to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for that question. As an immigrant, actually my story is a little different because I came to this country by DV lottery in 2007 and without language, without English. The first challenge was, of course, English. And the second one, I can say limited communication. If you know, in Uzbekistan, we have weekly, monthly, it says GAP, Choyhana, Gashtag, Salbat, so different like we can sit with friends, like usually men separate and women separate, and we will exchange our problems or experiences about life. Here, that was one challenge, because when you don't know language, you cannot talk to your neighbor. You don't know your neighbor, you don't know your neighborhood and people, and you cannot communicate. So that was very challenge for me. It was very limited. And third one, we can say skills of living, we can say. I can give example, not enough skills. For example, in this country, now in Uzbekistan, of course, they're upgrading the whole, because of internet technology, they're changing. In the beginning, when I came, let's say, first four years, I didn't know how to make an appointment by online, how to call. You know, I went and I stayed in the line, you know. But I didn't know, because as an immigrant. And after a while, I learned that, for example, I can send the letter by USPS, or I can make an appointment by online, and to solve the problem faster, easy, and kind of things. And as a member of the board of Vatandosh Uzbek American Federation, we have usually lot of posts about misunderstanding this culture, this society. Sometimes, for example, I can give a good example. A call from a young woman. She was walking with her 6-year-old son in the street. Maybe son wanted the chocolate or candy, and of course she said no, because she's in new Uzbek, and she just hit his back. Just don't do that. Not to hurt him. Just don't do that. Don't cry. An American woman, she called 911. He has crazy woman hitting, But she didn't understand. And both, I mean, American woman and Uzbek woman didn't understand. It was misunderstanding. And police came, you know, in that situation, they arrested them. I mean, and they called us, and we sent to them a free lawyer who is from Georgia, Republic of Georgia, which is close culture. And they explained, okay, this situation, she's not trying to hurt him. Just it's kind of discipline. Like, in Uzbekistan, it's not a big deal. It doesn't mean Uzbek women are, angry, or she doesn't like her son or daughter. But it was misunderstanding that kind of things, you know. We have that problem, so we need to fix that. We have to explain. That's why information and legal help is number one thing, I think. So I think all Chicago, Teshabus, Vatandosh newspaper, all another organizations, they're working about this problem. So I think in future we will change this, we will update, we will give our knowledge to them. Works, I think. Thank you.
I would divide two parts until 2010 and before after. At that time, I immigrated 2003, 12 years ago. At that time, was many things were expensive, internet, WhatsApp, emailing, chatting, Facebook, Twitter. That time was very difficult to get information. I came here as a blind. I had some friends here, but I didn't have enough information. Nowadays, after 2010, there are lots of people coming here with the information. Even we don't know the information they have. Recently, for example, recently, 2 weeks ago, somebody was contacted from...
That's okay.
He's asking some apartment area we don't know, because he is finding from the Google internet. And then we decided to give him some places for 15 days, and then he can decide here what area he wants to, what school area, what price, and then here, there, and then he likes or not, for example. That time, even we didn't have enough source to call, because every minute was 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 15 cents, 10 cents, right? Now it's free to call. You can contact anywhere. So now it's easier. But the different side is a language barrier. Of course, many people, almost 90% people that I know, they don't have English enough to communicate with other, like American people or English speakers. So thing is, different sizes, we have to adopt American culture in terms of understanding. We have to understand, respect, and then keep our side this different way, but we have to adopt. Otherwise, without integration, we cannot achieve the whatever we have a folks like successful life. So
I was living in Chicago. Living in Chicago and coming to Chicago, I approached two uncomfortable two times. Once, my friend, American friend, praised my wife. He said, "You have wonderful wife." it's totally different mentality in Uzbek. If you to American, he says, "You have wonderful wife," they will be happy and say, "Thank you, thank you." But in Uzbek, no. It's uncomfortable. So, don't forget if you go in Uzbekistan, don't pray wife, don't touch wife.
So, So
I was born and grew up in social system, communist system. I was director of a construction company, but came here, I was starting work as housekeeping. So it's different. It's because of language problem. So as Bishop says, it's first problem is learning English. So now, why we organize this company is this Uzbek American Association to help to Uzbek people how to quickly learn to English. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, quickly I can tell. Well, I think I am from the luckiest immigrants, probably because I came to the U.S. with full scholarship to study a master's degree. Everything was provided for me. Even they came to pick up me from the airport. They helped me find an apartment. Even my school provided furniture free of charge. So everything was available for me. But still, since I decided to stay in this country, I didn't know that I needed to open a credit card. Like, I had my debit card, my checking account. Why would I need a credit card? I don't need loan or something. But later, I think in the second year, I realized if I want even to rent an apartment, you need a credit card, you need a credit history. I didn't know this stuff. I built more credit. I could be eligible for things that I later decided to do, which I couldn't because I didn't have credit history. And as Delano mentioned, I think we need some guidance about the basic must things that everyone who comes to the U.S. needs to know about the system in the U.S. Thank you.
Any questions, Marla?
Yeah. So three small questions, two easy and one sensitive. The two easy one, is there a community of Bukharian Jews, emigre, and are there a connection between this Uzbek Bukharian Jew community in the U.S. and the other Uzbek association? Second question, when you publish online or in paper, how do you solve the script issue? I mean, in which alphabet do you want to write? Cyrillic, Latin, or Arabic? And how do you manage the fact that some people have been raised in Cyrillic, the other in Latin, and then you have the first generation, those, the Uzbek coming from Afghanistan, they are used to another alphabet. So how do you discuss the alphabet issues? And then the sensitive question, how do you manage the fact that some of you arrived as emigres or as students and others arrive as political asylum seekers? So how do you manage the political tension, the fact that some communities are politicized because they are made of people who wanted to leave Uzbekistan, the so-called Crimea community? I mean, how do you manage the tension for making the community a kind of functioning system, even if sometimes you may have, I guess, political differences? And how do you manage the fact that some want the community to be very politicized while the other want the community to be depoliticized?
I think I can comment about that script thing. Because we have this issue with our newspaper.
Yeah.
Latin Deutsch, which we were like, if you can see, it's Cyrillic, all these issues. But initially it was in Latin. Because in the U.S., the English is based on Latin alphabet, and all our children who grow up, or who even everyone like Alan Jonaka, they all can read it. Why should we write it in Cyrillic? Because officially in Uzbekistan now it's in Latin. So we made it in Latin, but we got a lot of complaints from older generation people. They said they can't read well in Latin. Can you make it in Cyrillic? We made like two types of newspapers. Vatandosh, which basically was in Latin, and Vatandosh Plus, which was the next issue, and we did it in Latin, in Cyrillic, to serve both types of people. But later on, we decided let's make it in Cyrillic all, because most of us were more comfortable in reading in Cyrillic than in Latin, even myself. So, yeah.
It means that the Uzbek community coming from Afghanistan cannot access...
It's also about language. People from Afghanistan, we can understand each other well when we speak, but still their language dialect is very different. If they read our newspaper, maybe they can understand 50-60%, but not completely, because our language is a lot different from Uzbek in Afghanistan or other countries.
Okay, the alphabet, I prefer Latin, as the paper says, because why is Latin? After 2001, I think 2000 or 2001, Uzbekistan, they changed, we have a law about changing the alphabet from Cyrillic to Latin. Not 100%, of course, it takes time. The problem is now new generation after let's say after independence, like young people, some people they think Cyrillic is as a foreign languages alphabet. For me, for Navajo, for Dlaram, maybe for all of us, that's fine. Cyrillic is okay. But now when you speak, who is going to high school, middle school, they don't know if they don't know Russian language very well, they cannot read. So this is first problem. So that's why, in my opinion, Latin is better. I know in Canada, I checked, we have Uzbek American Association in Canada. They're using still Arabic alphabet because they're from mostly majority from Afghanistan. But I checked their website, they start using English. So I think they have some limited like access, but good things they understand and they can watch, for example, Voice of America, Uzbek service. They have very good daily radio programs and weekly TV shows. So that's why they can use that because they understand Uzbek. So it's the first question about Bukharian Jewish. So Bukharian Jewish community, yeah, we have good. We can say. We have very limited partnership because we are meeting only during like Nowruz, Mustaqilik celebration, New Year, and some kind of cultural events. I think, of course, they came like a long time ago, like they had 1950s, after the 1990s, and 1991 after. They have big group in Queens, Rego Park, New York. Of course, the organization is very strong because that members, they have good businesses, very successful businesses, and they have good communication and good partnership with Russian post-Soviet Union republics people, Jewish people. So we have a plan to organize some events, and actually they came to last event when it was organized in Uzbekistan embassy in Washington DC. So they have some interest too, because they like our culture. Our culture means their culture too, because they are very strong for traditional and cultural thing. And third question about the political side, it's I will answer for this question as a member of the Vatandosh. So yes, we have not only in Uzbekistan, everywhere we have they have, each country they have some problem, some oppositioners like political, who face political problems, as well Uzbekistan too. But as a member of the Vatandosh, our focus, because I don't think so, like too many people live in Uzbekistan. Who's coming to U.S. Very happily, because DV lottery, by student visas, by work visas. So that's why our focus to help new immigrants who's coming from Uzbekistan as a DV lottery winners and students and people who planning to live here. Because some, yeah, we have some groups here. Vatandosh, we don't have any like a plan with them, so they can do their jobs. But so we will do our focus, our purposes to help our Uzbekistan's immigrants.
I can add a little bit about this. You see a very interesting pattern. The Uzbek community is very atomized. You know, they are concentrated around people who have their own networks. And those people can, through their own cultural, maybe business influence, gather people around them. So what you have are groups of people who share the same views. And most of the immigrants, I mean, if we just, you know, specifically focus on Uzbeks, they don't want to be political. Because the primary reason is they want the doors to the homeland to be open. And that's their main priority and main concern. So they don't want to shut the window that they have. And that's the reason, that's the main reason too, they would like to work closely with the Uzbek embassy, because by working together, by cooperating, they also want to let the government know that they're not the enemy. That, you know, that they're here, they're happy living in the United States, but they're not necessarily opposing the government. Because obviously when you leave your homeland, you know, back at home, people think that, well, you know, you're sort of betraying, right, the society that brought you up. So they try to avoid that issue. My question to all of you would be, I know that your organizations have been trying to work with the embassy. And what kind of assistance, what kind of aid do you want the Uzbek government to provide for you to establish organizations? And how closely have they been working with you? And this is specifically for Vatandosh and the Chicago Association.
First, I would like to address first question before you. It was about Bukhari and Jews. We don't have any connection as a Uzbek American Association of Chicago in Chicago area with the Bukhari and Jews. So second thing, personally, we use the name as a website holder in the organization. We use the Latino alphabet, no Cyrillic, and then English. Everybody can access there. The third one is the
immigrants political versus the regular immigrants, how can they talk with our organization. Our organization is main policy is the to keep culture here, Uzbek culture, and then provide to Americans or American citizens better quality and trustful information. And then provide the education for the Uzbek language and other useful stuff for the children, for the school, creating school, such as things. That was my short one. And the second one, there's we are always inviting the New York Uzbekistan consulate in New York, always Independence Day, Nowruz Day, and then Washington Uzbekistan Embassy in Washington, and they are always keeping touch. We are with us. So recently, as I said before, on January, like March 21st, we invited them. They visit us, both from New York, Vice Consul Ulubek Ahmedov, and then Mr. Furkatenge Sidiqov. So they are always trying to get information from us what we need to help. So, as I said before, they want to provide with the school supplies. So,
question. Okay. Actually, it's a very nice question. I was waiting this question. As a member of the Vatandash Uzbek American Federation, okay, we have very good partnership and very good connection, like organizing tradition and cultural things. It's actually, I'm happy. But I think we have some barrier, which is we need to remove that for next purposes, like to organize events for Uzbek people to help, like give information, like legal information, like counseling, consulate services. Actually, I can say my opinion about the counseling services in DC and in New York City, because why I'm saying, someone posted my cell phone number in the Vatandash comments as a legal helper, advisor. They called me, okay, hi, Dilshad, are you a consul? Do you work in consulate? I said, no, I'm not consul, but I can give some information. Oh, I need the help to get some document or to ask some information from consulate. We need to change that thing, because some people, they still think like who come from from like villages, you know, because they have problem in Uzbekistan. Maybe they never went to that office, they never called, because we can say uneducated, maybe which is not enough knowledge. So we need to change. For this thing, we have to organize different events for Uzbek people, for Uzbek immigrants, with Uzbek consulate and Uzbek embassy. So they have to explain their doors open for them. I mean, because they are representative of big country in America. So the organizing events will help, like different with different topics. So second thing is good news. They change counseling services. I mean, better positive news, because of, for example, New York, you can make an appointment by online to from Monday to Wednesday. And it's actually very helpful, because when I went maybe 2 years ago, it was very small room and people are waiting outside. And, you know, sometimes when hot, they don't have place to stay, because the security will not put the inside of the building, because it's like they have a ton of like different countries consulates. So they change, it works. It's very nice, because you can make an appointment. You don't have to wait now. Just go make an appointment, and they will send you a sample of that document, which is you can update in your house. If you have printer, you can print out. If you don't have printer, just go and take that information, whatever document, and you can, like notarial services, you can do
This is very good thing. And so we have some plan with some activist people. We need actually to build like basic information, like brochure, I think, for new immigrants. We need help as a we want to include that information, like counseling information, in that brochure. Not only because usually people, they have two questions as a new immigrant, so they will ask how to get like for basic American problems, how to solve. We want to include that. Okay, first, as an immigrant, you can go to this website. You can go to this place to learn something. You can apply a tax file in this website. Kind of basic information. Plus, we want to include that counseling, Uzbekistan counseling services in that brochure. So we need help for them to publish that information. I hope they will help us, and that's all.
Thank you. I have a short question to Dilara. Are there some associations like Tashabuz but working on Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, or Tajikistan? And if yes, are you in touch with them? I mean, I'm perfectly aware that laws are very different from one republic to another, but at the same time, all these republics still face some common issues in terms of laws. And I was wondering if cooperating with other associations in other Central Asian republics wouldn't be a way to think more globally about the common issues that these republics are facing, and maybe to think more on how to push for reforms, as, for example, we do in the European Union. We all very often compare, I mean, the different laws to try to improve them. So I was wondering if you had that in mind. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I am aware that they have similar projects in Tajikistan, which I heard was successful, and one existed in Kyrgyzstan. These are the pro bono legal services projects, but they're kind of similar to ours because they worked. They also worked online and from the distance. It may not be online, but through the phone, through the SMS systems, and other ways. But in other neighboring countries, they have more pro bono legal service programs than in Uzbekistan. I know in Uzbekistan, when I was a student, there were 3 legal clinics operating, but they were in a small scale, and the issues or the areas covered were very small, and they never did a representation in the court. They were just providing information or helping in drafting legal documents. And I'm not sure how many operating in Uzbekistan right now, but even there are some, they are very small in scale, and not many people are aware about existence of such services. But I heard that in Tajikistan, it is operating in a big scale through using engaging phone companies, like some Tajik version of like MTS or Beeline, big companies in those countries, where people can text their questions, legal questions, or seek legal assistance.
Like now the current situation is a little better because some people start thinking about to support Vatandaş, but very limited. So this is main problem. So we have to work on this and to like support and to get more help from them. So and plus volunteers. We are looking for volunteers to because I remember when I joined to Vatandaş, when I came, they called me as a speaker, as a MC in that event, and I like the project, so that's why I joined them. So we need kind of volunteers too. So we can show that our programs, we can introduce ourselves and to support new immigrants.
There is obviously a lot of interaction between Uzbeks in America and home, right? Uzbekistan. How do you see your own impact? I mean, aside of economic, financial impact. Impact on the mentality, on political thinking.
I think we are the classical example for having some impact from distance because we work online, and since we provide information and advice, and in the most important cases, in the legal issues, and some nature of some cases are different than those inside the country where they can take the case to the court or openly say about things, but we are kind of pushing, trying to educate people that they have a right, they have rights, their basic rights all are, all exist in the laws and constitution of Uzbekistan. So laws and legal system of Uzbekistan for their defense. They can use it anytime, but the one thing, they should be aware of them and they should know how to use them, because it's not easy. One thing is to knowing them, other thing is how to use them or how to predict what outcomes may be for them, you know, may affect them in the future because of those laws. And since we are doing this kind of trying to push them to take action, for example, giving information in maybe one step, but teaching them how to draft a complaint form or how to write a complaint to the court, what to say when he or she goes to the court, what should she be aware of or expect from the officials is another thing. And when we have provided all these, so we're trying to take action. And once they do take action regarding the violation of their basic rights, fundamental rights, I think we have reached maybe some part of a goal to educate them, you know, to think differently, to look into things with a different eye, with a different mind.
So as I told in my speech, our goals, same thing. First of all, I give you some information about Chicago's Uzbeks. In Chicago, about 1,000 Uzbeks, and most of them have bachelor's degrees. So nowadays they're taking nice jobs like computer engineering, and they're buying houses, and they're sending money to Uzbekistan. Yes. And second, our goal is educate Uzbek children. When they grow up and they go back in Uzbekistan, and It will be beneficial for Uzbekistan. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. So we have some challenges in the New York area. I think in future maybe we will move from New York to Chicago or California. Why? Because we're people now, Uzbek people living in the Brooklyn area, we have all majority Russian speakers. This thing, like we can say, this thing is affecting like to learn English. Because some people, they think, you know what, I don't need English because I know Russian. That's why I can make money. And even they are not thinking about future education and to build businesses or open businesses. Because of that reason, maybe we will move to Chicago. Because in Chicago, I know without English, is not easy. So, or maybe, I don't know. So New York, you know, they have more than 8 million population and mostly immigrants. So this is, I think we need to think about this thing. So or we need to work like strongly to teach them English. And about the law things, legal help. So actually, if we check in New York area, we have some Uzbek speakers, Uzbek lawyers, but we don't have any Uzbek law office. Can you believe? We don't have. They work in Manhattan, very good firms, law firms, for someone. But that's why I decided to come to GW Law School to open my law firm in future, in who can speak in Uzbek, Russian, and a little bit in English. So that's why I think we need more volunteers like Dilaram, like Begzat, because they are doing like very, very good job. If you check Tashabbus, sometimes I use, they have a bunch of information in Uzbek, Uzbekistan legal system. I can give an example. One woman, young family, they called, young, very young, they 20-something, they said, we want a divorce. And they went to Russian speaker lawyer. He asked $5,000 for divorce in America. If you check Uzbek law, family law, you can divorce in Uzbekistan in if you don't have any children. If you're a young family, you can divorce. You can file divorce in ZAGS. Just like marriage registration office, you can do by law. You don't need to go court. But if you don't have any children, if you are a young family, if you want, but both sides show the agreement, yeah. But you don't need $5,000, but I mean, you can certify that certificate of notarial, like apostle, I think it calls, by Uzbek law, and you can use here. So kind of things they don't know, so you have to wait. You have to pay, like marriage counseling is not easy. Yeah, it's not free. If you go, you have to pay for marriage counseling. And kind of things. So we need more volunteers, like Laram, like Benzot, like, and of course, Uzbek, yeah, law schools. And if you have children, please.
Send them to law school.
Yes, send them. Yes, yeah. Because we need help. We need legal help. We need supporters. We can solve these problems together.
So one interesting development in New York has been this specific focus on religion, on Islam, on so-called Uzbek Muslims. Why do Uzbeks in New York need their own mosque? Why do they need their own imam? Why do they need their own Muslim center? Now we have that there is an Imam Bukhari Foundation that's just been founded. Why?
Because not only in Uzbekistan, we have in like even Islamic world, we can say in Arabic, we have, you know, Sunnis and Shias, which is a big group, and we have a little difference. I mean, about religion, it's not easy to talk because if you don't have you don't have enough knowledge. But I can tell my opinion why we need Uzbek mosques, because first, if you go to New York, like we have main, we can say two big groups. Like we say Pakistani, Islamic group, and Turkish. I'm talking about Brighton Beach area, like Brooklyn, where Uzbeks live. And, of course, Arabs. So sometimes they have little different differences, like you can see, like a day of that, for example, about eight time, they have little differences, and the main thing, I think, language. When, if you go to Juma, yeah, namaz, like praying time, the imam will read, he will share Islamic knowledge, his knowledge in English. If new Uzbek immigrant if doesn't know English, how can he understand what he's trying to say?
this is main problem. If we have Uzbek imam and Uzbek mosque, the imam can give his speech, his knowledge in Uzbek language, which is will be helpful for the immigrants. And sometimes people will call, okay, oh, you know what, I need the help to read the azan to a newborn, a child. Do you have any, you know, and if you don't have someone, okay, you need to find, like, usually people, they call, like, or like during wedding, like marriage, you have to read nikah. And it will be good if we open Uzbek mosque. It will be good because then the imam will know, I mean, our first of all language, second of all our cultural plus traditional things. So, and it will be helpful for Uzbek immigrants. That's why I think very important to open our Uzbek mosque to get enough information for followers.
It should. You said it was joke, of course. You said you have to move all the Uzbek people to the Chicago or California. There is no Uzbek speakers there, right? To learn the more English language. That was okay. I was agree with that. Now I'm a little bit confused about the mosque. You're saying you have to, or it needs to be open mosque with the Uzbek mullah or whoever who's going to read or teach or tell something in Uzbek language, which is can be understandable to Uzbek population, which doesn't speak English. Isn't it better start in English speaking masjid to learn step by step? For example, all of us have a kids. They go into the school, English school. They don't have Uzbek teacher or Russian teachers in the school. That's how they learn quick English language. So we are. So I think it's my personal opinion. So I was confused in your two opposite things.
Okay. Yeah, this is a very good point. Why I'm telling that? We have three arrested men, Uzbek, two is from Uzbekistan and one is from Kazakhstan. And if you check with their background, yeah, one guy who's from Jizzakh region, he didn't speak in English. He didn't know language. Because he went to Turkish mosque, we checked his background, we spoke with his co-worker and plus the owner of the business, Gyro something business. He didn't know language. He went to Turkish mosque. He's a perfect follower, Islam follower. So he wants to learn information. He wants to have some knowledge about Islam, very strong. But his problem was language. He didn't know, and he just knew few. Because he was very active in Triton to masjid, Turkish masjid, because when we checked that documents all we read, he went always to that place. But he didn't understand what did imam trying to say. And that's why he worked in the like kind of like basement area, because he was preparing for salads kind of things as a worker. That's why he didn't have any communication. He didn't have any like people who can teach about Islam in Uzbek. That's why main point, it's kind of we don't need big mosques. Like, we don't need big location, very beautiful. We don't need. But for beginning, as a beginner, we need like small place, which is who can speak in Uzbek. And to teach them when, like, during the immigration, like, we can say, like, as a beginner, of course, we need in English, it will be better. But if you don't know, they don't know that language, how you will teach, I mean, what they want. So in that situation, they can join easily to, we can say, bad ideas, like, that small groups. So that's why the problem, he left message in Uzbek. In their website, which is
the FBI track.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a temporary solution
for people as they learn English.
But then, very quickly, where do you get the imam? Does this person come from Uzbekistan? Would this be an Uzbekistan certified imam?
Yeah.
Because then that takes you to.
We have good experience with that because Turkistan and American Association, they every year they call from Uzbekistan. Islamic Uzbekistan, Muslim, yeah.
religious office which is certified who can speak Uzbek and English. You know, we have in Uzbekistan Islamic University, which is very nice, very powerful, very strong, very good students. They are sending, since I think 2010, they have this. They will provide place to live in a center in Turkestan American place. And actually, Imam, four times I saw, they brought their children, their family. So it will be good if we got certified Imam, which is who can speak in Uzbek and English. We can do that. That's why we are trying to build that thing. So Imam Bukhari Foundation, it's a new foundation in Brooklyn. They are trying to solve this problem and to get a certified Imam from Uzbekistan.
Although I recognize the fact that religious sermons should be language accessible to the people who come to those mosques, bringing an imam, if I'm not mistaken, the foundation already has bought an imam, I think it's not the wisest decision to make, because an imam in Uzbekistan, taught and certified in Uzbekistan, who speaks Uzbek language, may not be able to comprehend, understand, and deal with issues people face in this U.S. community, the U.S. soul, because these are whole different bunch of problems, much more heavier in weight, in scale, and importance. That's why I encourage, if since they already brought, I encourage association and other organizations around them to invest in re-educating those imams into this U.S. system, U.S. society, and issues, and legal system also, because they will be getting questions from people regarding domestic violence, who they turn to the imam, or psychological or social issues. I also encourage, as other organizations like Chicago Association for Uzbeks, literally taking that, send Uzbeks to law school, investing on the youth or newcomers to send them to critical areas, to the fields that they need representation or defense from. For example, we are observing that there is big need for legal representation, legal help, or social help with the social issues. Then these associations or communities should invest sending their children, their young people, to those areas, to schools, so that they can study, be knowledgeable in those areas, and come back to their communities and help them, because they will be speaking the language, they will be familiar with the culture, and they will have the necessary skills to work in this society.
Again, I'm sorry. Regarding Turkestan Uzbek Association, I do know that many years ago they brought someone from Uzbekistan, certified imam, if you know that. And he been very nice in the beginning, super nice. Everybody used to visit him. After a while, he changed a lot. He filled the American greens. He filled the American culture, and he started changing a lot. And then I don't know what happened. He had to leave. Do you think is it going to happen again, or do you think it's going to be 100% listen, 100% going to be okay, whatever you guys need and looking for?
So, you're talking about which one, actually? They had two.
So, that's a good example, not only one then.
Yeah, I think I will support Loram's opinion, because the problem was that I know who's you're talking about, the guy in the Turkestan American Association. So I think to bring certified imam, it's, in my opinion, still good. If that actually that Imam Bukhari Foundation, which is a God certified one, Laram, he was actually he was an immigrant already like 3 years in Brooklyn, so that's why they try to certify, which is they who knows already issues, problems like immigrants' problems. So of course, does it mean certified thing or certified person, which is always perfect? So it can be. So in that situation, in that case of, so did it work? Does it mean certified thing is very nice, perfectly quality, very very good quality? So, but it does it mean all certified people are not very good? So in that situation, of course, they tried to, I mean, they decided to send him back. So it's their decision, which is, but we don't need to scare like, oh, certified it, okay, maybe is it good or is it bad? But we need, I know the problem, we need the person who can speak in Uzbek, who can give that knowledge for followers, for audience who speaks in Uzbek. I know that. So we need Uzbek speaker imam who knows language, traditional, and religion, knowledge, and religion knowledge. I know that. We have to, I think, like provide services in Uzbek. It's my opinion.
Right now we're very much preoccupied in the preservation of our culture, our religion, our language, our identity here in this country. Very quickly, what is the vision? Like, where do you see yourselves in 5 years? Obviously, there will be a generational change. The community will change. But, like, as organizations, where are you going? What's the next thing? Or what kind of aspirations do you have other than, obviously, promoting the culture within ourselves? And we have, like, 2 minutes, so very quickly.
Yeah, our goal is to keep our Uzbek culture still, and then we have children there. Half was born in Uzbekistan. They came here as a child, and then growing here. After 5 years, they become like high school students. Some of them middle school students. So we have to keep our language, culture, and tradition with them in their heart. So we don't forget which is their root, where they came from. Definitely, America is the country best opportunity. This is their land to grow, educate the child, and to be safe in the world. Plus, we don't have to forget our children. They do not have to forget our tradition, the language, culture, and that's where our goal is, integrate them.
In my opinion, so we should educate our kids to use American science, logic, and values, and harmony with Islamic morals.
Okay, you said 5 years. If we check American like immigrants' history, they did very good things. Like, who opened Google, who opened the PayPal, Facebook, all immigrants. So I hope we will continue as immigrant. And I'm waiting Mr. Barack Obama's decision about who wants to free 2 years community college, which is very good. So we hope he will do that. He will like prove that. And because if you check New York area, young people after high school, if you check, for example, Brooklyn Community College, Queensborough Community College, if you go now, even professors, they know some Uzbek words because they have like majority students in two colleges, Queensborough Community College and Brooklyn Community College, all Uzbeks. I hope in 5 years they will graduate, they will start build new businesses, they will work for government, for like community, for society, And we will hear good news about them, not, you know. So it doesn't mean like if we heard about ISIS thing like Uzbeks, like three Uzbeks, it's nothing. It doesn't mean all Uzbeks are bad. Because if you check Uzbekistan, I think, you know, the gentleman knows Uzbekistan history. We had very successful history, successful people in any area. So hopefully we will hear very good news about the Uzbek immigrants in the United States.
Okay, well, on that very optimistic note,
yeah.
We'll end our roundtable. Thank you so much. Conversation will continue in other places.
By the way, I have some newspapers that I can give away if anyone wants.